that without my pens. My apologies.
I called it. Thank you. Be seated. Good morning. This is the last case. We had three oral arguments scheduled for this morning. This is the last of the three. We thank you for being here today. Before we begin, I understand the attorneys are here. They are ready and they've checked in. And I'd like to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Wade Birdwell. To my left.
Bade Wordwell. Yeah, you were about to say, yeah. Bade Wordwell. Yes, you were.
And to my left is Justice Mike Wallach, and I'm Bonnie Sitters. I'm the Chief Justice of the court. Would the clerk please call the case? You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. Good morning. I'm Bob Davis. I represent the City of Gainesville in this case. This is an interlocutory appeal of the trial court's denial of the city's plea to the jurisdiction based on immunity. During World War II, to get fighter pilots up in training, they built a bunch of airports in North Texas. And when the war was over, they deeded those to the various little cities. In 1948, the City of Gainesville got a municipal airport. 72 years later, Ms. Sharp, the plaintiff, got out of a private plane, had a dog on a leash, a water bowl in the other hand. She's looking off to the distance to the grassy area so her dog could go to the bathroom, and she tripped and fell over what's called a tie-down hook. They call them tie-down hooks, anchors, bolts, but they're basically a little eye hook. In this case, below grade, it's embedded in the concrete, so when there's wind, they tie the wings of the planes down so they don't blow away. So I might refer to them as tie-down bolts, tie-down anchors, or just tie-downs. But this is a premise case. And because the city's a governmental entity, there's no dispute this was a governmental function. The Tort Claims Act limits the waiver of immunity. And in this case, it's under Section 101.022A, and this legislature has decided that's a licensee standard, unless the citizen pays for the use of the premises. And that's an interesting distinction, and I'm going to talk about their position on that in a moment. But what does that mean? What did the city owe to this lady that got off this private plane on this tarmac that had been around for 72 years? Well, they owe the duty not to injure her willfully, wantonly, or through grossly negligent conduct, and to use ordinary care to warn of or make reasonably safe a danger knot. Procedurally, what I did is I brought this plea and I challenged the jurisdictional facts. I attached evidence to it, which was in essence a de facto summary judgment. And that is how y'all will review it, as you know. It's a de novo review, but it's akin to a summary judgment standard. What I believe the evidence conclusively established is two things, both prongs of this standard, this licensee standard. One, that before the accident, the city did not have any actual knowledge of any unreasonably dangerous condition.
Then why was it marking the other ones and not this one?
And that is what I think, I disagree with the plaintiff's counsel or the appellee's counsel about the record. They weren't. If you look at the map that he produced, that he cites to in the record, what was marked, that T, that's the parking spot. That's not the tie downs.
Is there a fact issue on that though?
No, Mr. Vinton was clear, and he talked about the FAA standards. You do not have to mark, paint, or otherwise demarcate a tie-down bolt.
You don't have to, but was there a fact issue on whether it was marking a parking spot or marking the tie-down?
I don't believe so. Mr. Vinton, the airport director, had been there for 14 years, was very clear. In fact, there was a lot, and there's discussion, and you'll see in the deposition, about whether there was yellow paint around this particular one or not, and he said, I don't see that.
What would have been the point of asking about the yellow paint if there wasn't yellow paint around other anchors on the tarmac?
I assume for the appellants to try to create some type of fact issue when one doesn't exist. But even if it had been marked or not marked, that doesn't go to the two courts.
So there's nothing in the record to indicate that any other anchor on that tarmac had any kind of marking on it whatsoever, and that the T that has been represented to the court, the yellow tee isn't even in close proximity to the anchor. It's indicating something else.
If you look at the citations to the record that they put in their brief as the others were marked, it is the tee that demarcates, like a parking space where the airplane goes in between. Mr. Vinton was asked about, are these painted or have they been painted?
How close in proximity does the tee get to the anchor?
It would I don't know, and I don't know that that answer's in the record either. It would depend on where the actual tie-down was. Now, for this particular tie-down, it was out in the open. It wasn't near a parking space. And we see this was recorded on a security video, and you see the pilot, Mr. Larcher, had stopped and parked to get gas.
So this wasn't an actual parking space anchor. This was just some random anchor out there.
It was one in between the grassy area and the gas station. At one point, had there been parking there?
So there might have been some P-51 that had been anchored to it back in the day. But when the Gainesville turned it into a municipal airport, that wasn't one of the places.
That's not a parking space. Where she fell, and you see it on the security video, she is walking from the bathroom, take a break, and that's what she was doing. And this tie-down area is in the middle of the tarmac. It's not by a parking space. It's not, and you'll see in the Google map that they've attached, it kind of shows you a bird's eye view of the layout of the airport. They weren't parked in a parking spot. They weren't parked anywhere near. That's a red herring. And Mr. Vinton, the airport manager, had been there for 14 years. And what they do is they ensure things could be on an airport. Every morning they go out there and drive around and look for debris, dead birds, pebbles, things like that. They inspect every morning and they look for dangerous conditions. That's undisputed. The FAA comes in routinely. The state specs. 72 years, nobody has ever said that tie-down bolt needs to be painted yellow, it needs to be demarcated, it needs to have anything done to it. In fact, what I thought was interesting is, and it's in the record, and it's in the deposition, and it looks almost like this one. There's no paint around it, there's nothing. Which you also...
That would also show that there's always another anchor because we're dealing with two wings, or at least two other anchors, two wings and a tail.
And there are, for whatever reason, the Air Force decided they needed to put, they may have different size planes.
So they're randomly out there on the tarmac. It's not part of an actual marked parking space, but it may have been a parking space at some point in time in the past where there were two others associated with this particular one.
And there is another one, I guess you could say, if you look down the line, there's one previously, but when and why that got put there, nobody knows. That's how the city got it, changed it. They haven't taken them up. The other thing that's interesting is these are not big. This is the bolt like this, and there's photographs that are attached. It's actually below grade. They don't stick up. They don't catch your toe or trip you if you're walking. They are below grade. How she got her foot and caught that, I think, is still unknown. She didn't know. She just says she tripped. And when you watch the security video, she's looking. She clearly is looking off in the distance. The dog's walking in front of her. She's got her stuff in her hand. And she falls. There's no dispute that she tripped and fell. But whether that's an unreasonably dangerous condition is highly disputed. What I think is interesting, to your point, Justice Birdwell, if this was just a random bolt that's out there with perhaps not giving anybody warning that, oh, there's two of them nearby, we're in a parking spot, there should be a tie-down bolt. They have had balloon festivals, they've had concerts, they have little kids come out there for tours. There have been estimated tens of thousands of people who have been in that exact area, and there have not been any other reported accidents ever. Mr. Vinton, the airport's manager, has been there for 14 years. He's never heard of one. Part of his deposition, there was a request for production, and a duke has taken. The Supreme Court has told, and this goes, it really, I argued it going to the actual notice contention, but it really shows unreasonably dangerous to it. The evidence applies to both of those prongs. If that below grade tie down bolt had been dangerous or unreasonably dangerous, it makes common sense, and the evidence bears out, that there would have been somebody else that had tripped or fallen, maybe not injured themselves, but had tripped this. There is no evidence in the record of any other person reporting to have been injured or falling in that tie-down bolt or any tie-down bolt.
Well, the fact that no one reported it just proves that no one reported it. It doesn't prove that it didn't happen, correct? Okay.
And that's very true. But the flip side is then that negates that the city had any actual knowledge of it.
It negates the actual knowledge, but doesn't really negate the unreasonably dangerous.
And that's why I say it goes to both. I think the same evidence goes to both prongs. It clearly negates no actual knowledge, but I think it also negates unreasonably dangerous, because if it were unreasonably dangerous and someone did trip and fall and injure themselves, either they would have reported it or somebody else. Like in this situation, there were two other pilots there that came up immediately. There's hangars there that are rented. People have flying lessons. This was on a Sunday evening, but there were still other citizens who came up and helped Ms. Sharp. And another city employee came up. Absolutely. And if they didn't, that means A, they didn't get hurt, or B, for whatever reason, they didn't tell the city. But how would the city learn then of something? If there was something so inherently unreasonably dangerous about a tie-down hook that's below grade on an airport tarmac?
Well, it's below the grade of the scoop, but the scoop means that it's at even with the rest of the tarmac.
And that's why I'm knifed down to show the scale of it. So there's one of the pictures.
That's the width of the mm-hmm. scrape. It's not the length of the scrape.
Which is 9 inches a foot, but.
Is there anything in the record to indicate how Ms. Sharp came across that? Is she just saying that overall that's where she tripped?
No, I believe the pleadings, and I think the security video pretty much clearly shows she's got the dog on the leash.
I guess my question is what's the condition of the premises of which she's complaining? Is she complaining so
tie-down bolt? They don't talk about the area leading up to the tarmac. They don't say it's uneven. They don't say it's got grit in it. She didn't slip because there's a pebble that caught her foot. The way I read their pleading and the way I approach the deposition is, what caused you to have this incident? And she says, I caught my toe on the tie-down anchor. So, yes, sir.
Changing topics, on the selling of the gasoline, you paid for it with a credit card. Who was the person who's receiving the payment by the credit card?
The city sells gas.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'll talk about the paying for the use of the premises. I think that's a red herring. That doesn't apply here. I mean, there's no fee, and it's undisputed. There's no fee. You could land at Gainesville. If you want to go walk on the Gainesville airport today, if it was safe, knock yourself out. People come and watch planes. You can enter the premises for free. You can land there for free. Some cities have fees to land and take off. Gainesville doesn't. So that's why, I don't know why people stop there. But in response to the plea, the plaintiff says, well, wait a minute, they paid for these because Mr. Larcher bought gas. Well, think about this. I don't pay for the use to come to this courthouse. Any citizen can walk in here and use your courthouse. But if I bought a Coke down in the vending machine before I came up here today, have I just changed the standard of liability? No, I didn't. Buying that Coke didn't mean I paid for the use of this courthouse. I bought a Coke. The pilot bought gas. He didn't pay for the use of the premises. If they hadn't bought gas, she would have been able to walk her dog and have it go pee on the grass whether they bought gas or not.
That Coke is incidental to the courthouse. The fuel is not incidental to the
There are people.
Well, it'd be the same thing as a filing fee. You come in and you pay a filing fee. That doesn't change the nature of the relationship.
Fee to file documents, because that's what the Texas Supreme Court has required. I see my time is up, but I think the paying for the use of premises just does not apply. The gas fee was not to use the premises. You could have been on that premises and done the exact same thing that they did for free. It's just he happened to get gas.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices. My name is Jesse Calderon, and I have the honor of representing the appellee, Suzanne Sharp. Now, there's three issues before the court today, the first of which is regarding whether that condition posed an unreasonable risk of harm, and lastly, what her status was, either an invitee or a licensee. The appellant described the facts of the case, and I generally agree with his description of what happened, but the video is key here. It clearly shows that Ms. Sharp is walking as a reasonable person would when, out of nowhere, her foot is caught on this tie-down hook and she falls, seriously injuring herself.
Tell us about the evidence with regard to the marking of other tie-downs.
Yes, and in that regard, the photos will show that these T's do delineate where the tie, and most of the parking area looks to be painted. As the court pointed out, this bolt was out in an area where it was unexpected. It was unexpected that there would be a random bolt protruding from the ground where Ms. Sharp was walking. And so she had no warning. And that will go to the unreasonableness of the hazard.
Part of the reason why you cite to the yellow T actually points to the anchors or gives warning of the anchors in any way, shape, or form, as opposed to the T simply being a line of demarcation vis-a-vis here's where, when you pull up, here's how you need to pull up so that those will be available to you. So there's nothing about the T's that indicates anything warning vis-a-vis some type of pedestrian or anything of that nature.
I would disagree there respectfully that the anchors are at the end of the T. So if the T is here, the anchor is at the end. And so I guess common knowledge for those who travel the airport would understand that there is an anchor point at the end of that T. It would be akin to a curb at the end of a parking space. So those are warnings saying the anchor points will be located here. And there is evidence that this was previously painted. There is some evidence that it was previously painted. Going back, however, to the actual...
How many T's are there out there?
Off the top of my head, the record isn't clear as to how many. The photos will show that there are quite a few.
Okay.
And they're in a uniform fashion, so it is like a parking space. You would expect parking spaces to be relatively close to each other. The area where Ms. Sharp fell is obviously away from where these other parking areas are located. Moving back to the actual...
Is there any testimony that ties together the T as being tie down?
Yes, I believe the record, and I don't have the citation to the record at this point, but during Mr. Vinton's deposition, he does describe that the anchors are located near the, I mean, and I say near, but they are, and that is in the record. So that there is testimony that ties the parking space to where the anchors are located. Additionally, if we move towards the knowledge requirement, while prior reports may be a factor in determining whether or not the city has actual knowledge, it is not the factor. And it is not in contention here that the city acknowledges that they knew that this tie-down existed. It's simply the argument is coming down to whether or not that condition was dangerous. Was the city aware of the danger that's a hazard, that bolts on the tarmac pose a hazard, that unlevel pavement pose a hazard, and all three of those elements are located in this one tie-down, in this tie-down bolt. The depression in which Ms. Sharp caught her foot and tripped is unlevel pavement. It's surrounded by debris, gravel, pebbles, which conceal the bolt, and then the bolt itself is a bolt in all intents and purposes, which is a trip hazard.
I plead that Sharp catches her foot in the depression or just catches her foot on the anchor?
It is a general pleading, as far, you know, general notice pleading, and it states that she caught, you know, the tie-down anchor. There is some description that says that the tie-down anchor is in a depression, so that is part of the pleading, but the hazard that is complained of in the petition is the
bolt. Are you asking us to reasonably infer that the dangerous condition you're talking about isn't just the bolt, it also is the depression?
It is a cumulate.
Would we do that?
It is a cumulate. Yes, all of the elements combined enhance the danger. The bolt by itself would be sufficient to be a dangerous condition in which she fell. However, combined with the surrounding tarmac that is unmarked, combined with the gravel that conceals the bolt, combined with the depression in which she, you know, her foot falls into, all of that combined adds to the unreasonableness of this condition, unreasonable risk that it poses.
Do we know which way she was walking vis-a-vis the depression and the anchor? Was she walking perpendicular to the depression and therefore straight on with regard to the anchor, or was she walking straight on with regard to the depression and therefore perpendicular to the anchor?
So the anchor, if I understand that your question correctly, the depression, if you think of it like a scoop, she is walking parallel to the scoop in which her foot is allowed to slide into the long portion of the hole, and then the tie down hook is
perpendicular to the anchor.
Correct. Okay, so she catches it in the worst possible scenario in which her foot is allowed to enter the depression and then is caught on the widest part of the bolt. A mea culpa by the city stating that we understand that this is a dangerous condition. Circumstantial evidence can be used. That was stated in the city of Corsicana v. Stewart in 2008 by the Texas Supreme Court. Again, in Enos USA LLC versus Ingram in 2016, and TxDOT, and most recently in TxDOT v. Bryan Milton, which is a Dallas Court of Appeals case in 2018. And in those instances, circumstantial evidence can be used if it can establish actual knowledge, whether when it either directly or by reasonable inference supports that conclusion. And here, with the testimony of the city that they understand that all of these are dangerous, common sense would lead that this combined condition would also be dangerous. And the city's aware that it needs to warn or alert, as the city's testified to, individuals of hazards on the tarmac and in the apron or the ramp area, as it's known. While it is not the same hazard, the city undertook marking of the curb and the median, the fuel island, because there was a change in elevation, and that change of elevation could result in a fall, and that the fall was dangerous. And so the city is aware that trips and slips are hazardous, and items that create trip or slip hazards are also hazardous, and that goes to the danger. And there is sufficient evidence to present to a jury on that question of fact. Moving on to the unreasonable risk of harm, again, there's no one definitive test to determine what condition poses an unreasonable risk of harm, but the courts have looked at various factors. Some of those factors were, are the conditions clearly marked? And in this instance, no. The condition was not clearly marked. In fact, it was, in all intents and purposes, concealed. And again, I'll refer the court to the video. If you watch the video, at no point will the court be able to see the tie down that trips Ms. Sharp. Even looking at the photographs that have been produced and are part of the record, it is incredibly difficult to see the tie down. And so someone, as Ms. Sharp, who was a first-time visitor to that airport, had no expectation that that tie down was going to be in that location. And while the staff of the airport may be familiar with these tie downs and know exactly where they're located, those who are visiting the airport have no idea where they're at. Now, the appellant refers to all of these events and these tens of thousands of millions of hundreds of thousands of people that come out to the airport and that there's never been a reported injury. However, there is no evidence to show where the events were specifically taking place, what the layout of the trucks, of tables, of all of the parts, or maybe that there's planes, because that's why people are visiting, you know, the airport, to see the planes. If the planes are anchored down, people are not going to be walking over the tie downs because there's going to be a plane there. And so it's flawed to say that because so many other people have been there before that there couldn't have been a prior injury. Interestingly enough, in regards to the curb in front of the FOB, Mr. Vinton testified that he himself tripped over that curb and didn't report it to anyone. And so it is very possible and logical that other people may have tripped and fallen and not been injured, and simply didn't report it because there was nothing to report. Most people are embarrassed when they have a little stumble or a fall, and they get up and they go on about their day. In this instance, Ms. Sharp fractured her face and fractured her elbow,
well,
and she wasn't
a stumble wouldn't necessarily be evidence of unreasonable danger. You could have hundreds of people just kind of stumble over that, and it would be a trip hazard. No doubt it's a trip hazard. The question then becomes whether it's an unreasonably dangerous trip hazard.
And in this case, Your Honor, the city takes their plaintiffs as they come. And so if someone is more agile and they stumble and they don't necessarily...
Well, to the extent that we can infer, make a reasonable inference that it's a trip hazard because either a trip hazard because of the depression or a trip hazard because it, even though it may be flush, what type of trip hazard it is in terms of it unreasonable dangerousness.
I believe that that would be left to the jury. We simply need to present evidence whether there's sufficient evidence for a jury to determine whether or not that condition posed an unreasonable risk of harm. And I think that, again, the standard here is simply more than a scintilla of evidence. It's the lowest standard in regards to how much evidence we need to provide. And that, I believe, has been met in the trial court, which, you know, from Cook County, the trial court, and I believe Gainesville is the county seat, the named defendant, there the court found that there was sufficient evidence to survive the plea to the jurisdiction to move the case forward. Again, we're not trying to decide as a matter of law whether or not this was an unreasonably dangerous condition. Simply, was there a fact question? And the answer should be yes. Now, an open and obvious hazard, the metal bolt is exactly the type of condition that the airport staff goes around to collect because they understand that the bolts are trip hazards, that they are dangerous. I mean, that's in the record. That's part of the city's testimony. And this one is meant to hold a plane. So it is not going to move. If it comes to a human walking and they catch their foot on this, they're not going to move that bolt. They're going to either fall over, or if they are fortunate enough to regain their balance, they may be able to walk it off. But that bolt is immovable for all intents and purposes. It sits in a depression. It's away from the other tie down, so Ms. Sharp was not able to reasonably expect there to be a bolt in the middle of the tarmac there. The pavement around it was unlevel, and a great point that the justices recognized with this tie down was inoperable. It served no other purpose. It was just out there. It was a hazard for hazard's sake. And so if the city wasn't using this tie down, then they could have filled it, they could have marked it, they could have done many things, and they just failed to do so. I do want to touch briefly on the invitee and licensee issue. This court in Posey did an analysis and rationale on what elevates someone to a invitee status. And I agree that at a minimum, the plaintiff in this case would be a licensee. And I think there's sufficient evidence to show that she's met the actual knowledge standard. There's sufficient evidence to create a fact issue that she's met the actual knowledge standard. And there's sufficient evidence to show that there is a fact issue regarding the unreasonable risk of harm. But in regards to whether or not Ms. Sharp is an invitee, here, this is not akin to buying a Coke in the courthouse or even a filing fee, because someone may file paperwork in the court and never enter the courthouse. There's a lot of scenarios where that may happen. In this case, when someone lands specifically for the reason of purchasing fuel, that is much more akin to the city selling water in the desert, not...
Is it likewise akin to coming to the courthouse to pay a filing fee to file a document? I mean, does that change the nature of the courthouse as a government building? And the duty that's owed by the government to those who enter this building?
I would make a distinction there, Your Honor. It would not. But in this case, the city is there is a mutual benefit to the city. They are selling fuel. They are acting as a business. And in that selling of fuel, there is a mutual benefit. And the causal connection there is that when they sell fuel, they ideally make profit. They make profit on the sale of fuel. And so that would be similar to a fee. And the fact that they don't have a landing fee or that they don't charge an anchoring fee, you know, for parking the planes, that would be like selling gas cheaper than your competitors. That attracts other people to arrive there And this court understands that you can have different classes of plaintiffs on the same premises. You may have people there that are visiting and they want to enjoy Gainesville and the city. They may be there to go on a walk. They may be there as a trespasser. But in the same regard, they may be there for a business purpose. And in this case, the business purpose was the purchase of fuel. And there was no other reason. The testimony of Ms. Sharp and the affidavit of Mr. Larcher both conclusively state that there was no other reason that they were stopping at the airport. They had to refuel. And again, that goes to the scarcity. It's not like we can just go to any, it's not as if Ms. Sharp could have just stopped at any corner store. There is a limited number of places in which someone can refuel their plane. And when they are low on fuel, they have to do that urgently. There is danger to not having fuel in your plane. So they are limited by their choices. And when they had to make that choice, the city should be treated as, or Ms. Sharp should be treated as an invitee on the premises in that regard. Ultimately, the trial court got it right. They denied the defendant's plea to the jurisdiction, whether it was based on Ms. Sharp's status as an invitee or licensee, or whether it was based on the evidence provided, which showed that there was more than sufficient evidence to raise a fact issue on the actual knowledge requirement and the unreasonable risk of harm requirement. They got it right. And so we're asking that this court affirm the trial court's decision in denying the plea to the jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a couple of things in the record I think are important that we ought to talk about. I mean, Ms. Sharp was not some naive citizen who just stumbled upon the airport. She was a student pilot. Plaintiff's counsel had suggested, well, she'd never been to the airport in Gainesville before. Okay. But there is testimony in the record, she had actually seen her instructor tie down their plane using one of those tie down bolts. She knew exactly what they were and what they were for. She landed.
But she didn't know they'd be out in the middle of nowhere.
This isn't an open and obvious plea to the jurisdiction.
That's true, but she's landed at an airport. It would be reasonable to think if you're at an airport, there might be, if she was at the park, if she was at the water gardens, and there was an airport tie down, that would be really unusual. But this is not someone that has landed somewhere where she has no clue as to what kind of equipment might be on an airport tarmac. So, and that's just to go, you know, and that, I was just touching upon, she didn't reasonably expect that there would be a tie down. Well, she's on an airport tarmac. It would be reasonable to think that there would be equipment used for airports such as a tie-down bolt.
But it might actually be reasonable to think that those tie-downs would be limited to where the yellow T's are marked.
That's very possible, too. I want to read, this is the actual pleading. This is the from her, this is the judicial admission. This is the actual allegations, page 7 of the record. On May 17th, 2020, sometime between approximately 4:30 to 5:30 p.m., plaintiff Suzanne Sharp landed at the Gainesville Municipal Airport to refuel and deplaned onto the tarmac. Unbeknownst to plaintiff, there was a, quote, tie-down, end quote, anchor protruding from the ground that blended in with the tarmac. As plaintiff was walking on the tarmac, the, quote, tie-down, end quote, anchor tripped plaintiff, causing her to fall violently face first to the pavement. As plaintiff was walking on the tarmac, the tie-down anchor tripped plaintiff, causing her to fall violently face first to the pavement. Her specific allegation, her judicial admission, it was the tie-down. It wasn't that the concrete was unlevel or that it blended in or that there was a scoop around it. She has alleged, and that's what I asked her about, what caused you the tie-down. Not that it was surrounded by a depression, et cetera. But let's get back to the unreasonably dangerous.
Counsel, you argued earlier that effectively that the tie down is flush with the remaining part of the tarmac, but we see from the photos that there is a depression in which the anchor is, which allows the top of it to be flush, and so it's actually
extends, it does in fact protrude from the lower portion of the depression. So would you not agree with me that an anchor protruding from a flat surface is in fact a trip hazard under ordinary circumstances? These not necessarily being ordinary circumstances, but under ordinary circumstances, it would be a trip hazard. And so really what we're talking about here is whether or not it's an unreasonably dangerous trip hazard.
I would agree, but also disagree. And I know that's a evasive lawyer response, but it would be a trip hazard if there was a large gap. But in this situation, if you look at how high that depression is and how, and that's why I had Mr. Vinton go out there and take, I want to see, was this, you know, above grade? If you're walking across, is it something you catch your foot on? And I think that explains why nobody else has ever tripped and fallen in 72 years. That however she did it that day, however she got her toe down in whatever angle and managed to get into that depression that nobody had ever managed to do before, I don't know. But when you look at the photographs and you look at that Swiss Army knife next to it, this isn't like a drop down and she fell and caught her foot. Let's go back to what does the Supreme Court say about an unreasonably dangerous condition? They define it, and it's in our brief. And if I could, I just had it tabbed, but they define it. There's gotta be a reasonable probability that you know that there's gonna be an incident happening. Well, how would the city of Gainesville ever know that there was a dangerous condition if nobody had ever encountered it? No one, they inspect it every day. There's nothing about it that is dangerous. Nobody has ever fallen before. And this isn't a scintilla case. I'm not here today arguing.
Well, but again, that gets us back to knowing there's a trip hazard, but making the estimation that it's not an unreasonably dangerous trip hazard.
I think you have to make two conclusions. First of all, you have to conclude that the bolt itself is a trip hazard. There's no evidence of that, particularly considering that nobody else has tripped on it.
So the actual condition itself is not any evidence of whether or not it's hazardous.
Well,
I don't think the case law says that. I think we can infer and reasonably infer from the condition itself whether or not it's hazardous. Whether it's known or whether it should have been known or whether it's unreasonably dangerous, those are three other factors. But we can look at the condition itself, and you guys knew that there were anchors around there on the tarmac.
Absolutely.
With regard to that.
Oh, the city, I mean, I'm not here to tell you they didn't know there were anchors. They knew, they've known the anchors were there since 1948. I mean, they've always known the anchors are there. Whether that presence of the anchor constitutes a hazard, I think, is not beyond dispute. But the next step, and the vital one,
but
here,
all they've got to do is raise a fact issue as to whether or not it's hazardous. And all they've got to do is raise a fact issue as to whether or not it's an unreasonably hazardous.
And that's the key point there, the unreasonableness. And how do you prove that? And that's what that Ayala case goes to. They really talk about notice there. But if this were unreasonably dangerous, somebody else would have tripped and fallen over it. That condition hasn't changed in 72 years. It's not like they went and did repair work and somehow the bolt got higher or lower or got moved to a different spot. And if you think about this logically, there's the fuel island and there's a beeline to the lounge area. And that's where she was, the grassy area. You can see it in the videos, you see it in the photographs. This is the same path that people take when they get gas and go inside to go to the bathroom or sit in the lounge. This isn't like way off in the corner of the tarmac where it's, this is the first person that's ever been in this area. And that's why I attached, and that's why Mr. Vinton talked about all the events that happened there. There are photographs there of thousands of people in that exact area. If this were a trip hazard or specifically an unreasonably dangerous condition, somebody else would have fallen. Basically, what the plaintiffs would have this court find is strict liability, that out of 72 years of a facility that the city has owned, one person falls one time and all of a sudden immunity's been waived and they're on the hook. That's not what the legislature intended when they created these standards.
Your time is up.
Thank you. We would ask that the court respectfully reverse and render.
Thank you.
Thank you.
forgot to say that your case has been submitted.
Thank you.